Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Kuf Bet Amud Bet, three lines from the bottom, just to review the Braita that we brought at the end of yesterday's daf to support Rava's contention that there's a difference between Anfilia Shel Beged and Anfilia Shel Or. That there are slippers, socks that are made out of leather that have a classification of a shoe, whereas there's Anfilia Shel Beged which do not have a classification as a shoe. This has nafkaminot in these two areas. One is Yom HaKippurim, whether you can or cannot wear it on Yom HaKippurim, is a violation of the Isur of Inilat HaSandal, as well as for Chalitza. Does it qualify as a min'al, as a shoe that you could use for Chalitza? So now the Mara brought a braita that supports that distinction that Rava had mentioned, because Tanya Kavote de Rava. Chalitza b'min'al ha'nifram, if he did Chalitza with a shoe that was nifram from the word purim, which means torn or ripped up, shechufet rova regel. As long as it still covers the majority of the foot, then it's fine. Bisandala nifchat, or a sandal that was worn down, shemekabelet rova regel, but it still holds the majority of the foot in it. Bisandal shel sha'am, with a sandal that's made out of cork, it seems here, vishel siv is out of bark. Both of these, because they are solid enough and protective enough, which is the key element over here, they provide protection for the foot. So even though they may not, which is somewhat questionable, qualify under the requirement of b'manalech tachash, that they be made out of leather, but they still are structurally sound and protective, so they are given that classification of a shoe. Bikava kiteya, with a prosthetic for someone who is missing their leg. Over here, Tosafot says that you have to make a distinction here in terms of the prosthetic, that it's someone who wears it as a leg, but they're really wearing it as a shoe, because it's covering the last point in their leg, which is still their own. But it's not someone who walks on it a lot or bears weight on it a lot, because he says otherwise it would have a din that it all should be tamei tumat midras. And we know that the kava ketia is not mikabel tumat midras. And therefore Tosafot says, v'yesh lamar deino su kol kach lehilucha. It's not so much for walking. Still a shoe, it's still something that's made for protection. And since that it functions in the way of protection, it's enough to be classified as a shoe. So even though it's not weight-bearing all the time, but nevertheless it works like a shoe and that's enough. Bimuk. Muk is machloket about what exactly it is. Some say that it's a shoe that goes up higher up onto the calf. Others say that a muk is a shoe made out of felt. So either way, these are shoes or, again, things that protect the foot, and therefore they're classified as a shoe. B'smichat haraglaim, and with the covers of the legs. The Gemara in Shabbat talks about the methodology in which people who were missing their legs were able to get around in their day. They didn't have wheelchairs. So the Gemara Mishnah there in Shabbat describes the pieces or materials that he used to get around. He used to have blocks that he put on his arms in order to put his hands or arms into the ground that helped him to move, and then he would swing his body underneath that and keep moving forward that way. Put his arms down, pushing himself forward. Somewhat akin to crutches, but they were much closer to the ground because he wasn't weight-bearing in any way. He was carrying his whole body. In order to protect whatever was there of his legs, he used to have these leather covers on the legs. So once again, they're functioning like shoes in the protection of the legs. So that's the smicha deraglaim. Anfilia shel or, and this is in support of Rova, here you have this leather slipper or sock. Ve'acholetzet mina gadol, and a chalitza from someone who is of age. That's one of the requirements of chalitza, the person be of age. Ben omeid, ben yoshe, ben muteh, whether standing, sitting, or bent over in all of these cases, the chalitza is good. Tosafot asks, what's the havamina that you couldn't do it sitting down? What's the requirement that you have to do it be'amida? So Tosafot brings two possibilities. One possibility is that it's a gemar din. It has the equivalence or the similarity to a gemar din. And just like a gemar din, the bali adinim have to stand up. So to over here, you would think maybe they have to stand up. Or the other possibility is that by the kriyata parshiot, the things that the Yavam and the Yavama have to say, there it says, Vamad Bekara, that they have to stand up and say them, so maybe we would have thought that that was an absolute requirement that they stand up. So here the Mishnah tells us that's only Lechatchila. B'diavad, If it's done in any of these positions, it is a good chalitza. V'chuletzet min asuma. Someone who receives chalitza from a suma, also chalitzata k'shera. In this case, again, the chalitza is good b'diavad, but not the chatchila. Tosafot again asks, what was the avamina that it should be problematic? Why would you think that a blind person couldn't perform chalitza? As references back to a Tosafot that we saw earlier, the inei as genim, to the eyes of this genim, Tosafot over there said the words genim over there was not extraneous, because if you had not written the words genim, you would have had a dangling modifier there, and would not be clear whose eyes we were speaking about. Were we speaking the eyes of the dayanim, or the eyes of the yavam? So there, Tosafot says, the words genim comes and teaches you that it's the inei as genim. So because of the inei as genim, maybe you would have thought that the Yavam also has to be able to see. Kamash Balon, that that's not the case. Or, the other thing is that v'yarka bifanav. It says that she has to spit in front of him. And just like before we saw there's a requirement that the zkenim see the spit from the woman, maybe the same thing is true here by the Yavam himself. It says v'yarka bifanav. She has to spit in front of him. So you would have thought maybe he has to see it. So again, the chatchila yes, but b'diavad, a blind person can have chalitza performed on them. They can be a Yavam who's blind. That is k'shera. All of these cases, b'diavad, is k'shera. Now the brayta gives you the other half, those items that are problematic. Aval b'min al hanifram, again, a torn up shoe, a worn down shoe, she'ein chofet rov haregel, that does not cover the majority of the foot. B'sandal hanifchat, or a sandal that's worn down, she'einu mekabel rov haregel, does not protect or cover or have the majority of the foot into it. U'b'smichat hayadayim, as opposed to before, those things that protected the legs, when he was moving himself along, this individual who had no legs. Over here, these are the either the wooden blocks or gloves that he uses for his hands to press into the ground to protect his hands or his arms as he's putting them into the ground. So they don't get dirty, they don't get stuck in the mud that he has, they don't get scratched up. So there was protection of the hands. Those are not shoes. They're not on the legs. They are on the arms. So they're not classified as shoes. Umanfilia shel beged. And a slipper, a sock that's made out of cloth. So here, it's not a protective item that you would go out in. It's something you would wear in the house, not outside. So it's not classified as a shoe. It's classified more as a slipper, a sock, something that's protective of the foot inside or makes it more comfortable, but it's not classified as a shoe. But let's admit a katan, a minor who is part of this process of chalitza, chalitzata, psula. All of those are problematic, chalitzot. And that's the support for Rova. Here, the Braita distinguishes between an anfilia shel or and an anfilia shel beged. And now the Gemara is going to discuss the Braita. Number one is Mani. Who's the author of our Braita here? It says Rabbi Meir here. It's got to be Rabbi Meir because of Rabbi Meir's opinion, the Gemara in Shabbat, with regards to Kiteya. It's not. Mishnah says a Kiteya yotzei bekav shelo divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that a person who does not have legs and he has this prosthetic that he wears on his leg, he's allowed to go out on Shabbat in that. It's not considered to be carrying. It's considered to be his shoe. It's considered to be a part of his clothing. And therefore, he can go out into the Reshut HaRabim with it on Shabbat. Rabbi Yossi Oser. Rabbi Yossi says he can't go out because he does not consider it to be a piece of clothing for the Kiteya. And therefore, you could not wear it. So it's clear here that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir is the one who says that the kiteya, the kav shelo, functions like a shoe, functions like something that he's wearing on his leg, and that's why he's allowed to go out on Shabbat with it. Rabbi Yossi obviously does not think that way. There is a problem with that because it's not so clear that he really thinks that it's not that way, because Rabbi Yossi might be thinking that it's a gzeira otu, which is that we're afraid he might come to take it off or it'll fall off and then he'll carry it, the prosthetic. So it may not be that he thinks fundamentally it's not a shoe. He might think that in Shabbat it is a problem. So it's not so clear that that Rabbi Yossi disagrees in this state, but the Gemara says clearly Rabbi Meir could be the author of this Mishnah. Gemara says then, Banfio shel beged, in the latter half of our Mishnah it says that if he goes out with a sock or slipper made out of cloth, that is no good. So atan rabbonon, that sounds like those that disagree with Rabbi Meir. Because the Gemara at this point assumes that Rabbi Meir's position is that you don't need a leather shoe. Because by the fact or the mere fact that we allow you to have a prosthetic be the shoe, the prosthetic's made out of wood. And he's counting, Rabbi Meir's counting that as a shoe. Then all of a sudden in the Sefer here, you're saying that, oh, a sock or a slipper that's made out of cloth does not qualify as a shoe. That sounds like those that are opposed to Rabbi Meir's Shita. So now you have the latter half of the Mishnah sounding like those opposed to Rabbi Meir, and the first half of the Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. So Amar Abaye made the Sefer Rabbanon, Reisha Nami Rabbanon. So Abaye says, okay, if the Rabbanon are the authors of the latter half of the Braita, so too are they the authors of the first part of the Braita. Reisha b'mechupe, or I'll tell you why, by the Kavshalo, by the prosthetic, it's considered to be a shoe. It's a case where it was covered in leather. It wasn't just a wooden prosthetic. It was a wooden prosthetic that was covered in leather, and therefore it's deemed to be a leather shoe. Samele Rova, aval in mechupe, or you're going to tell me now, if it doesn't have leather on it, my, what would you think? Pasul? That would be pasul. If that's the case, yochi, adatani seifa banfilia shall beg it. That's the case. Why does the latter half of the Braita say, you know, in contradistinction to those that are okay in the first half of the Braita, we say in the second half of the Braita, those that are no good, that's benfilia shall beg it. That's with a cloth sock. Liflog v'dida. Make a finer distinction within this unit itself. When is the prosthetic okay? Is when it's covered in leather. If it's not covered in leather, it's no good. That would have been a much finer distinction that the Braita should have brought up. Eloma Rova, Rova says, no, that's not the authorship of this Braita, but rather, Midoresha Rabbi Meir, Seifanami Rabbi Meir, the Resha is Rabbi Meir, and the Seif is Rabbi Meir. Hai Magin, Vai Lo Magin. Your distinction, your understanding of Rabbi Meir is incorrect. It's not because Rabbi Meir believes that it has that you don't need leather. He agrees that you do need leather. But he says that the definition of a shoe, or definition of these items, is what protects and what doesn't protect. So if again, by the Kav of the Kideya, by the prosthetic, it's functioning like a leather shoe would function, which is that it's protective of his leg. By the Anfilia shall beg it, even though there Rabbi Meir permits something that's not leather, he will not permit the sock or slipper made out of cloth, because that is not protective. It doesn't function like a shoe. And since it doesn't function like a shoe, it's not going to be classified as a shoe. And that's how Rabbi Meir can be the author of the Mishnah, even though he approves of things that are not leather, that's not the only qualification. It's not only, okay, not leather, if it goes on your foot, you're good. No, it has to be protective of the foot. If it's protective of the foot, then it'll be deemed a shoe, even though it's not leather. So in Filosha Beged, which doesn't protect the foot in that way, will not be considered a shoe. The Kava Kiteya, the prosthetic, does do that, and therefore will be deemed a shoe. So now, Ameimar is going to give us a qualification here, a very interesting qualification, which is Amar Ameimar. Hayman de Chalitz, Tzarech de Midchase Lekarei. A person who has chalitza performed on him, the yavam, has to put pressure on his foot. He has to bear weight on his foot in order to be chalitza. Now here it's not clear, and we're never told why a Maimar believes that this is the case. There are two possibilities. One possibility is he's trying to define what a foot is. The other possibility is he's trying to define what chalitza is. So it could be that you need to put pressure on the foot or bear weight on the foot, because then we're certain that the woman is removing the shoe. Because otherwise, it could be that the shoe is just slipping off by itself. If he bears weight into there, and then she pulls off the shoe, it's clear that her chalitza is what removed the shoe from the foot. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, how do I know that you have a regal over here? How do I know you have a foot over here? A foot is defined as something that can bear weight. It's something that can hold up the weight. If you can bear weight, then you have a regal. Doesn't bear weight, you don't have a regal over here, and therefore it would not be good to do chalitza on that part of the body. Amalei Ravashi le'ameimar, v'atanya. What about the braita we just brought? Ben omeid, ben yoshev, ben muteh. Whether he is standing up, whether he is sitting down, ben muteh, whether he is leaning over. Ema, just whether we mend the braita to say this, or this is a qualification that was understood by the braita, Ulolam, the doch is the karet. Ein ochanami, you're right. It doesn't matter if he's sitting, standing, or leaning, as long as he's bearing weight on the foot. So you can be sitting down and still pressing down on the foot, pushing weight onto the foot. Same is true if you're bent over or if you're standing. In all those positions, you can still bear weight or put pressure down on the foot. Vamara meimar, haiman de maske alichta de kare. One who walks or bears weight on lichto de kare, it's not clear exactly what this is, I'll discuss in a second, is lo chalitz. He does not do chalitza. So Rashi over here explains, what's a lichto de kare? Shiraglo hafuch. That his foot is backwards turned over, v'dores bel yonosh regel. And therefore he walks on the top of his foot. Right, so now question about what this means in terms of reverse foot. It's very possible or likely that his foot is not straight like you would have a normal foot where the ball of the foot and the heel strike the ground. It is rolled. His foot is turned in such a way that it's rolled over so that either it's bearing weight on the side or all the way upside down where the top of the foot now instead is bearing the weight instead of the bottom foot. It's a deformity. It's not a normal foot. It's not the normal way that a person would have this. It's a deformity of sorts. It could be also, we had this in other places that their feet were turned backwards. We're going to see in a second, the Gemara is going to quote it, that it might be even the feet are reversed, which is the toes come out the back side of the leg instead of the front side of the leg. Again, then bearing of the weight is not done in the normal manner. So now, Amemar makes the statement. And it's not clear why Amemar is pusel this individual. Seemingly, it is because he does not have a classification of a regel. And this might go back to the previous statement of Amemar, which is Amemar said you have to put weight or bear weight on your foot. So before we said there are two possibilities as to why that is. If you say the reason behind Amemar in the previous statement is because that defines a regel, a foot is the part of the body that bears the weight, then this might come from the same position. It may be of the same genre, which is if the foot is inverted or turned over, then it's not a foot anymore. It's not acting like a foot because it doesn't bear weight because of the deformity that's here, and therefore it will not be classified as a rego. If you think that the previous statement in Meimar had to do with chalitza, and it was defining how the woman does chalitza by putting pressure here, then it would not necessarily be connected to this statement over here, which is trying to define for us what is considered to be a rego. So then, Amar le Rav Ashi le Meimar. So Rav Ashi says to Meimar, Vatanya, Smuchot haraglayim, that which we just saw in our Braita, that said that the prosthetics, which are here, we said the Kava Kitiyah was a prosthetic, or the Smichot haraglayim, which are those covers for his legs that are on the ground, it's clear there that that individual does not have normal feet or normal legs here. There's something that's covering them. How is he allowed to use them? He can't bear weight on his feet. He's not really have a normal body structure that you could say about him, that he has feet that are bearing weight. So it says, my law of the chalitzba. So what it sounds like, he used that for chalitza, and it was fine. So as Mar says, lo, di'ay v'lay l'acher v'chalitz. So the Amemar says, no, you misunderstood the Braita. The Braita is not saying that that individual is missing the legs and has these covers for his legs. It's not he who's doing the chalitza. It's his friend who's doing the chalitza, and he took these covers that this individual used for his legs, and he used them as his shoes. Those will qualify as shoes for the other party who does have feet who can stand up on his own. But not to suggest that the person who is lame, who doesn't have legs to walk on, that he could do chalitza, because according to Amemar, that would not be the case. So Amar Rav Ashi, the Maide Kamar Amemar. So according to what Amemar says, Lav Bar Uba Chalitz, Valar Bar Kipuf Chalitz. So that was what, Fred, you remembered from Moed Katan, that those individuals gave Rav Ashi a very hard time, and because of that, their feet were reversed or turned over. And so those individuals, according to this statement, would not be able to perform Chalitza, because they no longer would have what is classified as a foot or a weight-bearing, according to Amemar. All right, so now, this statement of Amemar, which we read simply, and the Gemara doesn't even seem to be bothered by it, all the Rishonim take up the issue, even Rashi addresses it right now, which is, Amemar's statement is very difficult, because we had a Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that if an individual has minar kova lamato, from his knee and down, he can perform chalitza. If its leg is only from above the knee that he has a leg, then he can't perform chalitza. It's our Mishnah, minar kova lamalo, min kova lamato. Over here, Amemar is suggesting that you have to have a foot that you stand on in order to do chalitza. How do we explain, or how do you reconcile that with our Mishnah that says that this individual's missing his leg can perform chalitza? And even here in the case where he spoke about the smichot raglayim, he didn't say that that was the individual. He said, someone else can use his shoes. So how do you reconcile that within the shita of Amemar? So Rashi reconciles it this way and says, Vafa gavditznan, even though in our Mishnah it says, Ben arkovel amatok shera, even if his leg is severed below the knee, he could perform chalitza. There he clearly doesn't have a regel that's bearing weight. Hatom hu dichinechtach raglo. Since his foot is cut off, kamle shok. The shok now fills in as the foot. It's the next section that becomes the weight-bearing portion of his body. So if he doesn't have a foot, then the area of the calf, that area becomes the foot, or the equivalent of a foot. Brahman amar mi al raglo, that you have to take the shoe, whatever the cover is, off the leg. So hanu shoko, for him, that will be the shok. Abahai lav regelhu. Over here, the problem is that he does have a foot, but it's just not functioning like a foot. So you can't use the shok over here. You can't call it the shok as the regel because he has something below that, which is the foot. But the foot itself is not acting like a foot, and therefore it disqualifies him. So a person who's missing a foot entirely, according to Rashi, is in a better position in terms of a chalitza than someone who has a deformed foot. In the case where you don't have a foot at all, then the shok replaces the foot as that part of the body. On the other hand, if you have a foot that's deformed, and therefore that is still your foot, then the shok cannot be considered the foot, and that foot that's deformed will not be classified as a regel, and you can't perform a chalitza. That's how Rashi solves the problem. I'll just mention it here because it's going to come up in the Gemara a lot, which is that we said before, and Torah says that you have to take off the shoe of me'al raglo, from on his foot. So we've already discussed it has to come off the foot itself, and not me'al me'al raglo, not from something that's on top of what's on top of the foot. The Gemara also darshens from me'al raglo to mean that only something that is on the foot, but not something that's me'al me'al raglo, something that's above the foot. So over here again, it talks about the parts of the body. The parts of the body that are adjacent to the foot have a din like the foot, but meow meow raglo, things that are more distant from there, do not classify. Therefore, the shok, the calf area, is classified like the regel, as a din like the regel, but above the knee, the thigh, does not have a classification like the regel. Why is that important? Because Tosafot and the majority of the Rishonim, and I mentioned that to you in the Mishnah, do not agree with Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah. By not agreeing with Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah, they don't have the problem that is presented here. Rashi's interpretation runs into a problem that it's a Maimar saying something that's completely against the Mishnah. According to the other Rishonim, and you can see it here in Tosafot, they say that Rashi's explanations are completely wrong. And when it says min harakov lamata or min harakov malo, that simply means that that's where the shoe was tied. The shoe was tied on the calf, or the shoe was tied up on the thigh. Again, like a Roman sandal, which moved up the leg and was tied up the leg. If it was tied up at the thigh level, that's what it means to be narkova malo, is psulat. That doesn't work, because it's too high up on the leg where it's tied up. Then the chalitza, where she's removing it from the thigh, and not the shok. On the other hand, if it's tied on the shok, then it's okay. So that comes back to what I just said before, mi'al raglo. You can take it off from something that's above the foot. What's above the foot? The shok. What you can take it off of is something that's mi'al mi'al raglo. Something that's two derivatives away from the foot, that would be the thigh. So that's the distinction that Tosafot makes between mina amala minarkova, milala matala minarkova. Then he doesn't have a problem with a Maimar now. Because a Maimar and the Mishnah are not talking about the same thing. Maimar is talking about foot, and the Mishnah is talking about where the shoe is tied on the leg. Totally different issues. But eino chanami, that the Mishnah would agree with a Maimar and would suggest that if the leg was missing, that it would be problematic, like a Maimar suggests over here. Maybe that when the foot's problematic, or there's no foot at all, or missing a foot, according to Maimar, it's problematic. Now our Mishnah doesn't necessarily disagree with that. That would be the halacha, that it is problematic. Other Rishonim explain this Gemara very differently than Rashi, but then they avoid the problem here of the stira between the Mishnah and a Maimar. And so now the Gemara continues with our Mishnah, in our Kovel Amata, Veriminu. Says, by the Shlosh Rigalim, Rigalim Prat the Balei Kavin. So those that are olo the regel are excluded from the fact that it says regalim. There it says that prat the balei kavin to those that have prosthetics, because they don't have regel. They don't have a leg or a foot to go up to the mikdash with. So over there, it says prat the balei kavin, opposed to over here where we're saying minakov amata, shumaseh shani hocha, dichtev mi'al raglo. It says from on his foot. So now, what's interesting here is this favors Rashi's explanation. The fact that the Gemara questioned from Aliyah the regel and says there that if you don't have a regel, prat the balei kavin. It says someone with a prosthetic is not going to be a regel. So according to Rashi, the question is on our Mishnah, which is, our Mishnah says, minakov lamato, that if the leg is severed from the knee and below, it is fine. So now the Gemara's question, what do you mean it's fine? By Aliyah the regel, we said that that's not considered to be a regel. So that's a question going to Rashi. According to Tosafot, the question is much more difficult. Says minarakov lamato, that's not about a leg that's cut off. It's talking about that the shoe was tied on the leg. So the shoe was tied up on the calf area of the leg. And that's kasher. So now what's the question from Ole Regel? So that's what Tosafot just explained to us. That the question from Ole Regel is that you see that if you're missing a foot, you're not considered to be having a regel. So if you're not considered to be having a regel, then how can you call the shoe being tied on the shoke, on the calf, to be considered that it's tied on the regel? So after Gemara answers, Shani Hocha, Dichtiv Mi'al Raglo. So according to Rashi, Mi'al Raglo means something that's above the foot. What's above the foot? The area of the calf. So that's what it means, that you can't have something that fills in for the foot. It's not just the foot that is classified here as regel for chalitza. It's even the thing that's mi'al. Even the thing that sits above the foot, which is the calf area. For Tosafot, it'll be the same thing. That there's an area that is classified as being a regel here that is not the same classification by aliyah the regel. Yochei the malam in arakover nami. So what about above the knee? If you're saying something above the foot, mi'al raglo means something above the foot. Where it says mi'al, something that's adjacent, below mi'al to mi'al. But not something that is one derivative away. The thigh already is two sections away. I'll call it two joints away from the foot. Right? You have the joint of the foot, the ankle area, then you come into the calf area, and you have a joint at the knee that goes to the thigh area. So the calf area is one joint, is one derivative away from the foot. That's mi'al raglo. On the other hand, mi'al mi'al, the thigh is two derivatives away. It's already another joint, another section away. Samara papa, shmamina, hai is devira, this ankle bone, ad aranochit, must reach to the ground. Dis alkadacha mitzach posik, if you think that there's some break in the ankle bone, havalei iu me'au, then it is above, vishoka me'au d'me'au, and then the calf area would be above the above. So here, the foot is the bone that runs along the bottom of the heel. If you think that the ankle is a separate bone from the heel, that means that the adjacent bone or joint, one joint away from the heel, is the ankle. And then it means that the calf area is now a second one away, a second derivative, it should be pasul. So what Rav Papa concludes is that it must be that the heel and ankle, no joint between them. Basically, they're one bone, which is incorrect anatomically. They are separate bones, but he's suggesting not that anatomically, it's not that way, but we classify it as being a single bone because they function or they move together, and therefore the heel and the ankle will be considered to be one entity as part of the foot. Amar Ravashi, I feel tema mifsak pasik. Ravashi comes up and says, no, even if there is a separate bone between the heel and the ankle, kol b'dahadikara kikara dami. Anything on the plane of the foot is classified as a foot. He says that the definition of foot is not necessarily the singular bone that comes through here. It's not defined by bone, but defined by the plane of the foot. Whatever is in that area of the foot, including the ankle, that's all part of the foot. That's above the foot are things above that plane of the foot area. So even those bones are separate, even though the heel and the ankle bone might be separate, nevertheless, they're most classified as being the foot. Whereas Rav Papa is suggesting if the bones are not fused, they would not be considered to be a single bone, and then you would have a derivative, and then a second derivative by the time you got to the calf. So it turns out Rav Ashi, anatomically, is more correct here, because there is a separation of the heel bone from the ankle, but we're still classified as being a regel, and therefore the calf area will be mi'al raglo, and that's why it's qualified here by the chalitza. Minar kovo l'malo, if the leg is severed above the knee. Meitir Rav Kahana, wait a minute. Are you so sure that the thigh is not classified as raglo or regel? So here again, we've talked about three parts of the body here. We talked about the regel, which is the foot. Then we have the shok, which is talking about the calf area. And then there's the yerech, which is the thigh. Right? So the yerech is the thigh area down to the knee. The knee down to the ankle is considered to be the shok. And from the ankle down to the toes, that is considered to be the regel, the foot. Right. What we call regel today means leg. In the Gemara, regel means kafa regel, which is the foot itself. By definition, what we've just described here is we know where the foot is. The shok is mi'al raglo, and then we just said that the yerech is considered mi'al mi'al raglo. But based on that, you would say that the yerech itself, the thigh itself, is not defined as regel. It doesn't have a qualification as regel. Is that really true? And now we're going to bring psukim that seem to say otherwise. It says in the Tokacha, u'bishil yata ayotzeit mi ben ragla. In the fetus that comes out from between her legs. It's talking about a woman who's giving birth. So obviously when she gives birth, it's coming out between her thighs. And the Torah calls it mi ben ragla, between her feet. That would seemingly mean that ben ragla includes ben ayirachayim, between the thighs. So Amar Abaye, b'shash koret leleit, that when a woman gives birth, the birthing position, no etzet akaveha biyarkutea violetet. She pulls her feet up towards her thighs and gives birth. So she really is literally between her feet. Because of the birthing position that has, the knees are bent and the legs are bent, her feet are up against the base of her thighs. And that's how she pushes the baby out, but then it really, the baby's coming out, ben raglal. Not just between her thighs, but also between her feet. And that's why the pasuk says it that way. Tashma. What about the pasuk that's found by Mifi Boshet that says, lo asa raglav, lo asa smamo? This is from the time that David left during the merit of Shalom. Mephibosheth, to side with David, and so that he's siding with David, goes into Avelut, acts like an Avel. And over there it says, lo asa raglav. He did not take care of his legs, v'lo asa sfamo. And he didn't take care of his mustache. I mean, he didn't shave at all. So over there, when we're talking about shaving, obviously you're not talking about his feet that he's shaving, he's talking about his legs, that he was removing the hair from his legs. So over here, you see that, again, the thigh area is called regel. Why don't we say the same thing here by chalitza? Why isn't the thigh defined as a regel? Yes, we brought this as a proof earlier in the Masechta, if you remember, by Eshet Tufat Toar. There, the Gemara wanted to know what is that over there, she does her nails. The Gemara wanted to know, what does that mean? Does that mean that she grows them out, or does she cut them off? One of the proofs that we brought was Mir lo asa raglav, that he did not cut the hair that was associated with his legs. So asa over here clearly means to cut. So therefore the Gemara says by Yifat Toar, asiya must mean to remove or to cut. Now the Gemara says, lishna ma'alyo. It's euphemistic over here. So the truth is that normally he would shave his face, his beard or his mustache, he would trim it. And he also would do that with his pubic hairs. So the raglav here is not literally his feet or his legs, but it's referring to that private area. And it's using a euphemistic term to speak about that area. So you can't take it literally to say regal then means his thighs or his legs. It means that area, which they don't want to mention because it's inappropriate to mention it explicitly. Tashma. Ve'yavo Shaul asechet raglav. I have the story in Shmuel Aleph when Shaul's chasing David, that Shaul goes to relieve himself, to urinate. And it calls it lasech et raglav. Well, when you urinate, right, the urine comes out from raglayim, doesn't come out of your feet, it comes out from by your thighs. Again, that would suggest that the thighs are defined as a regel. Gemara says again, lishna ma'alyo. Again, it's euphemistic over there. Tashma, ach mesichu raglav, bachadar hamikera, that he was relieving himself in the bathroom, basically the upper chamber. This is with Eglon, Melech Moav, when Ehud ben Gera comes to visit him, he's going to kill him. They think that he's up in the bathroom. That's why they wait and wait and wait. He doesn't unlock the door. Meantime, after Ehud killed him, he escapes through the back of door of the palace. And there, he waited, waited, waiting, and finally they break in and realize that it's too long. At first, they speculate that he's in the bathroom. And that's why he's taking so much time. But again, here, mesichu raglav. So Gemara says, lishna ma'alyo. Again, it's a euphemistic term. Where it says, ben raglea kara shachav. This is by Yael, when Sisra is running away from the battle, and Yael entices him to come into the tent. Chazal believe that she enticed him through offering him relations, and through that, she weakened him, and then was able to kill him. Over there, it describes it that ben raglea kara shachav. So again, ben raglea means, obviously, he's having relations there, means between her thighs. And again, it's saying the word regel. Gemara says again, lishna ma'alyo. That's also a euphemistic term. So again, all these cases seem to indicate that regel refers not just to the feet, but to the thighs. The answer in all these cases, that's a euphemistic term. We're not taking it literally. You can't say that the thighs are called the leg. Legs, the regel means the feet. Regel over here means, used in a euphemistic term, that it means something in that area. The word rego has a broader and narrower definition, which is rego can mean foot or can mean the entire leg. That the Gemara does not assume, but you, again, right, you're mentioning like in modern Hebrew, there is that problem that you have a word that has both meanings embedded in it, and you could have answered that, but here it's, Gemara clearly thinks that these are all euphemistically used, that doesn't literally mean rego over here means foot, they're just giving something that's in that area, because they don't want to talk about it so explicitly. So now Rabbi Yochanan, once the Gemara said already, we're talking about this by Yael, then they go on to explain it. It says, Sheva bi'ilut ba'al oto rasha ba'oto ayom. That the rasha, Sisra, had relations with Yael, Eshet Chever Keni, 7 times on that day. Shenemar. How do they know that? Because in Shirat Devorah, where it blesses Yael and says that, Minashim bo'el tuvorach, that she is better or greater than the women of the tent. The Gemara in other places tells us the women of the tent are the imahot. That Yael, Eshet Chever HaKeni, is as greater, more blessed than the mothers of the nation. And over there it says, Ben Raglea Kara Nafal Shechav, Ben Raglea Kara Nafal, Besher Kara, Sham Nafal Shadud. So over here, what they're basically doing is saying every verb in these psukim counts as another bi'ah. These are all, again, euphemistically, bi'ah, shechav, kara, and nafal. Those three verbs are used again and again, and those verbs imply that there was intimacy between them. So if you count them up, you have ben raglea, kara is one, nafal two, shechav three, ben raglea, kara is four, nafal is five, bashir kara is six, sham nafal is seven, shadud. So that is the seven times that he had bi'ah with her. How was Yael able to do this? Why was she permitted to do this? Leaving aside the fact that she wasn't Jewish, that she was Eshet Chever HaKeni, so it's not clear why the Gemara even has an issue at all, because she's not Jewish, but how was she permitted to do this? Maybe because she's a Ben Noach and subject to the rules of Eshet Ish, and therefore her husband, this was a quasi-extramarital affair in that way. So maybe that should be a problem over here. Why is she allowed to be involved or allowed to do this? Anything that's good by the Rishayim, ra'ahi etzal tzadikim, is bad for the tzadikim. All right, we're going to explain this in a second. What they're suggesting over here is that Yael, Eshet Chever HaKeni, when she has these relations with Sisra, we know that in other places in Shas, the Gemara says is that there's ein mitasek bechalavim or arayot. There's no such thing as accidental eating of chalev or accidental relations. So that you can't just be doing something and then it happens this way. The reason is because v'hakamitane, that you get hanoah from these items. So you will be held accountable or culpable for actions, and there's no such thing as mitasek, as if you did something like unbeknownst to yourself. You were trying to, Gemara talks about this in Shabbat, you're trying to cut something that was detached and you end up cutting something that is attached. Again, that's called mitasek. By chalavim v'arayot, we don't say that because there's hana involved. Person gets physical pleasure out of these items. And so by definition, there's an association of the action with the individual that cannot be separated. You can't just separate it and say, this is not really your action or it's not intended action. The action brought you hana. Therefore, the culpability will be assigned to you. So the Gemara is basically asking the same question here. How did Yael engage in this activity if she's getting benefit from it? Now, Tosafot over here says, don't tell me the reason that it's okay is because she is a passive participant. This has to do with when a person has to give up their life. When the three avirot, the cardinal sins that one has to give up their life for, those are Avodah Zarah, Shfichat Damim, killing, and Gilui Arayot. Gilui Arayot is one of them. The Gemara over there says, why doesn't a woman have to give up her life? Because Esther Karkolami, she is a passive participant, and therefore a woman does not have that obligation to give up her life. Obviously, it turns out it's a machloket rishonim, whether that's the case, whether a woman can be an active participant and therefore be culpable, or by definition, are they passive? And that's what the Gemara there says, Esther Karkolami. She says, don't say over here, Yael, everything's permissible because she's Karkolam. She is just a passive participant. Because over here, she enticed him to come. It wasn't that he was coming to sleep with her or rape her. She enticed him to come. She's trying to draw him in. So you can't make the claim that she is a passive participant over here. So the question here is, then why did Devorah, in Shirat Devorah, compliment Yael? If her behavior is behavior that is suspect, because she's engaging in an activity that we would not condone, and that is completely problematic because of the hanoah that she gets, it's pleasurable for her, and says it's pleasurable for her, and she engaged in this improper activity, why is Devorah going on and on about how great Yael is? And that's what Tosafot says the Gemara's question is over here. The Gemara's answer is, Kotovatan Shereshaim Ra'ahi Eitzel Tzadikim, that it wasn't a pleasure for her because Sisra was a Rasha, and the engagement in this activity was ma'us, was disgusting to her. She was only doing it in order to kill Sisra, and the engagement or the activity itself brought her no pleasure in that way. As Rashi says here, Katsa Nefesh HaTzadik Ba'anatam. The tzaddik is disgusted or is reviled by this activity, something that is completely outside of the realm of what they were participating in. How do we know this? Shnema. It says, by Hashem appears to Lavan when he's chasing down Yaakov after Yaakov left his house. Hishama lachab, pen to the bear in Yaakov, mitov ad ra. Don't speak to Yaakov about anything, good or bad. Bishlama ra de chayei. I understand why Hashem said, don't speak to him about bad things. Elatov, my lo. Why not speak to him about good things? What was the problem about talking about good things? El Shmami na, Tomatan Shushim, Rahi, and Tzadikim. Don't speak to him about even good things, because what is good by you is going to be bad for the Tzadik. It's never good for the Tzadik. Bishlam Ha'otam. So over there, by Yaakov, I understand why Lavan's good is bad for Yaakov. Because Dilma Midkale Shma Davodat Kochavim. Because Lavan might mention Avodah Zarah in that case. The way Rashi explains it is that over there he asks him the question of Lama Ganafta et Elohai. Why did you steal my gods? So he's bringing up this issue of Avodah Zarah. That's how Rashi explains it. Others explain that that's not the answer over here. It's not, he's speaking specifically about the Avodah Zarah, but maybe he will bless him, or he'll say something in the name of the Avodah Zarah that he'll say to Yaakov, and that's why it's problematic. I would suggest simply, and that's what happens in the Psukim there, I'm not sure why that's not the easiest interpretation, is that afterwards, Yaakov and Lavan come to a covenant, a brit, together. And in that brit, Yaakov does something in Elokei Aviv Yitzchak, by the God of his father Yitzchak, and Lavan does it by Elohei Avi Nachor, and by the God of my father Nachor. So over there, he talks about a Elohim, it talks about a Avodah Zarah in the covenant, meaning that if they come to some agreement or something like that, it's going to involve the Avodah Zarah, that Yaakov's going to have to participate in something that evokes an Avodah Zarah, or a covenant that evokes Avodah Zarah. And that's why it should be problematic. So the Halacha, by the case of Yael, my Ra'a Ika. What bad is there that came out of this, that she had relations with Sisra? It says, the Kashadi Bazuama. There is this intangible problem, which is that the Tum'ah of Sisra would then be penetrate or somehow poison Yael, because it will now cause her to be Tumeah. Then Rabbi Yochanan, Mashash Banachash Al Chava, the time that the Nachash had some sort of relationship with Chava, Hitil Bazuhama, he then caused her to become Tumeah. Again, some sort of spiritual contamination that happened because of this. Yisrael Shamdu Al Har Sinai, Bnei Yisrael that were on Har Sinai, Paska Zumatan, that removed this spiritual contamination from them. Those that didn't stay in Har Sinai, they still have that spiritual tum'ah or contamination. And that's the problem over here. Again, that Sisra, who has this contamination through an act of intimacy, the Gemara believes that that contamination will be passed to Yael, and that's what she's going to suffer. She's going to suffer that intimacy with someone who has Zuhama that would pass that spiritual contamination to her, and that's what the Tovat Tad Vishayim is Ra'ah the Tzadikim. That which was good for Sisra was terrible for Yael. Again, the Gemara seems to believe that Yael is Jewish, which is not at all clear from the Sukkim, or it's almost contradicted by the Sukkim, because she is part of the nation of Keni, who were aligned at times with Bnei Yisrael, and we see them show up in different places, but they're not necessarily Jews. Chalza b'mna'al sheinu shelo. He uses a shoe that's not his. Tan Rabbanan. Na'alo. Ein li ela na'alo. The pasuk says na'alo, that has to be his shoe. Ein li ela na'alo, that it's actually his shoe. Na'al shel kol adam minayin. How do I use someone else's shoe? Tamalomer na'al mikol makom. The word na'al is repeated in the pasuk and tells you, therefore, not only your shoe, but even other people's shoes. Imkein ma tamalomer na'alo. Then why did right now in the possessive form, which means your shoe? Now, lo, haro'ui, lo. So it's not that it has to be yours in terms of ownership, but it has to be yours in terms of fit. It has to fit your foot. You can't take someone else's shoe that doesn't fit you. Prat le gadol, she'en yachol aloch bo. The shoe's too big that he can't walk on it. Or prat le katan, she'en yachofei rov raglo. Or it's too small that it doesn't cover the majority of his foot. Uprat le sandala misulayim, she'en lo akev. And to come to exclude a Sandala Misulaim, it's not clear what this is. Rashi gives two interpretations. One is, HaNifchat Shein Lo Akev, doesn't have a sole on it. The sole has been worn down to the point where it's not protective of the underfoot. That's one possibility. Or Rashi says, L'shnachril Hashem Mikamo, Nikra Misulaim. That's from the place or location, it's called Misulaim. And that's what Tosafot says over here. Shem Sandala Chad. Kein Da'amar B'Yerushalmi and Rashi. He says it's the name of a slipper, a type of slipper that does not protect the foot in the cave that doesn't have some sort of heel. Now here, instead of heel being something like a sole, it would be something that holds to the foot. It only has a sole. it does not have something that holds the foot, which would be equivalent today of a flip-flop, which is something along those lines, which is that it doesn't hold onto the akev. It doesn't hold onto the heel of the foot. So that's the way that you would explain this sandal mishlaim. All of these would be problematic with the terms of chalitza, because that's not na'alo, according to that definition of mishlaim, right? Depends how you define mishlaim over here. If you define mishlaim as missing the sole, then open back shoes would be fine. If you define mishlaim as being something that holds onto the heel, that holds onto the foot, then it would be problematic to have an open back shoe. Now, Abaye Avakai Kameder of Yosef. Abaye was before Rav Yosef. Remember, Abaye is the Talmud of Rav Yosef. Atay Yivama Alachlot. And then Yivama came in and they were going to do Chalitza. Samar Lei, Rav Yosef says to Abaye, Havlei Sandalech. Give him your shoe. Yahavlei Sandala de Smola. He gave him his left shoe. So he says, Samar Lei, Rav Yosef is back to Abaye. Imar Damar Rabbonin Diavad. That if you use your left shoe, Bidiavad, it's okay. The chadchila mi amar. Nobody said the chadchila to use a left shoe. You're supposed to use the right shoe, the chadchila. So why did you just hand him your left shoe? How do we know that that's the din? So it's not clear. Okay, that's a good question. How do we know that you have to use the right shoe? It's a machloket, whether that is a din de oraita, which is that you have to use the right shoe, because by definition, the Torah, anytime it uses the word yad, regel, now it always assumes that it's the right side, and therefore also over here would be Doraita. Others say that it's only a din derabonon. The Rabbanon said that since you're using a shoe and the right is the more prominent of the legs of the shoes, you should use the right one. That's only an imposition derabonon. Where it says, Amalei yachi sandal shenu shalo nami. He says, wait, what about a shoe that doesn't belong to you? So Abaye did it on purpose. He gave him the left shoe on purpose because he didn't want to give his shoe to this individual. Why didn't he want to give his shoe? It's because the Mishnah says, sandal she'enu shelo. A sandal that's not yours, that chalitzatak she'ra. That the chalitza is okay b'diavad, but doesn't say to do it l'chatchila. So why, Rav Yosef, are you saying to me, give him my shoe, which is only b'diavad? So how did Abaye do this without contradicting his Rebbe directly? He gave him the left shoe. Because he knew that Rav Yosef would jump on that and say, why are you giving the left shoe, the right shoe? So then Abaye can now has a way to speak to him about the issue. He says, well, you're telling me that left shoe is b'diavad? I'm telling you somebody's shoe is not their own, is also b'diavad. So he says, Imar damar b'avadon diavad l'chadchila mi'amor. Amalei hachi kamina l'cha. Havlei v'aknilei. He says, you misunderstood me. Rav Yosef says back to Abaye, I didn't mean give him your shoe and that's it. I meant give him your shoe and let him acquire your shoe. Give him a kinyan in your shoe so that it becomes his shoe. So get, you misunderstood. I didn't want you to lend him the shoe. I wanted you to give him the shoe and have a kinyan. Some seemingly, this is a matanah, manat achzir, which is that he's giving it and he's going to get it back. I assume he's not telling Abaye to give him his shoe permanently for this guy, but only for the performance of the chalitza, but to give him ownership so that it's his, the chatchila. Sandal shalates. A sandal made out of wood, our Mishnah says, is good, but you have had matanah. Who's the author of our Mishnah? Mishmol, Rabbi Meir, he. That's like Rabbi Meir we just saw before by the Brita on the Kiteya. That's not a Kiteya. Yotzei b'kav shelo, divi Rabbi Meir. He goes out with his prosthetic, Rabbi Yossi Yosser. So you see here that Rabbi Meir says as long as it's protective, that's enough to be classified as a shoe. You don't need it to be leather. Avua de Shmuel omer b'mechupe or b'divri akol. This has very important implications. It's covered in leather and it's the divri akol. So we said until now that a leather is the only thing considered to be a shoe. Where is it leather? Is the sole made out of leather? Or is the top made out of leather? Avoid the Shmuel gives us a chiddush here that has implications for Yom HaKippurim. Is that a shoe that has leather on top and the sole is a rubber sole is still problematic as a shoe. And therefore, on Yom Kippur, if you have a shoe that has leather on top, that is considered to be a menal, and you're not allowed to wear it on Yom HaKippurim, even though the sole is not made out of leather that you get from Shmuel. Basically, the explanation he says over here is that the wooden shoe is a case where it's a wooden, let's say a clog. It's a wooden sole, but there's leather on top that holds it on. And that's why it's considered to be a shoe, and even according to those that disagree with Rabbi Meir. So now we have a machloket about what Rava said here, which is, Amara Papi, Mishmei de Rava. Papi says the name of Rava. Sandala Muzgar, Lo Tachlots Bo. A sandal that has a nega in it, that's waiting to be determined if it is a nega that is problematic or not. Lo tachlots bo. You're not allowed to do chalitza with it. V'im chalitza chalitza kshira. But if you do chalitza with it, b'diavad, it's okay. Sandal muchlat is a sandal that's been determined to have a nega and is tmeah, that it's no good anymore. Lo tachlots bo. You may not do chalitza with it. V'im chalitza chalitza psula. If you use it for chalitza, then it's completely psula. The explanation of Rava's position is that When it comes to a nega muzgar, you're waiting for a determination about whether this is tamei or tahor. So in the meantime, or in the interim, it's still classified as a shoe, and then you can utilize it. We don't want you to utilize it because it's not exactly your perfect shoe, and it could be something that's going to be determined to be problematic, so don't use it. Because you might mix it up with a mukhlat. But, b'diavad, if you did it, it's good. By a mukhlat, it's already been determined that it's a full-fledged nega, it's tamei. What do you do with an item that has, or clothing that has nega in it? You gotta burn it. Well, if it's subject to being burnt, you can't get a no from it, then we have what's called kitute michtat shurei. It's as if it doesn't exist anymore. Because it's an isra na'ah, and it has to be burnt, those two things make it as if it's not a shoe anymore, because the end game for this is that it's going to be burnt and ruined. So if it doesn't have a shiur, then you can't use it, because here we said the shiur of a shoe is that's chofet rov raglo, that it covers the majority of his foot, or protects his foot. If it's ketute michtat shurei, if it doesn't exist, it's as if it's not there, then he doesn't have a shoe. And that's why it's psula. Rapapa mishmei derava, here's Rapapa, Talmud of Rava, who now quotes it differently, and says, echad sandala muzgar, echad sandala mukhlat, doesn't matter if it's just a nega temporarily or a full-fledged nega here, lo tachlotzbo, you shouldn't use it for chalitza, vim chalitza, chalitza tak sheira. But if he goes ahead and does it, then it's chalitza is good. Why, over here you would say otherwise, might be that he doesn't think that this is ketute michtat shurei, that it's missing its shiur, that's one possibility, or he might believe that a shoe doesn't require a shiur. The shoe simply has to practically protect the foot. Doesn't matter whether it's considered halachically to be there or not be there, the only thing you need is a shoe that protects, and that's it's doing that, even though it's asur ba'anah, it needs to be burnt. Meitave. So now we challenge this. Bayit ha-muzgar mitamei mitocho. Mukhlat mitocho me'achorav. A house that has a nega on it, that nega, the area where the nega is mitamei mitocho. Only on the inside of the house. If you go on the inside and the question here in Tosfot and Rashi, whether you actually have to be in the house, or if you simply just touch the stone on which the nega is on the inside, then that would make you tamei. Mukhlat, if you already determined that it's for sure that this has a nega on it, then that stone that the nega is on is mitamei, both inside and outside. If you touch it from the back of the stone, you'd also be tamei. Both of them are problematic. If you enter a house that has a nega on it, Tzorat has a din like Tumata Mate, which is its Mitamei Ba'ohel. It has the same din there, and so too. If you come into these houses that have Nigaim in them, you're going to be Tamei because, now you're going to be Tamei because of Biat Ohel. If you're going to tell me that when an item is now determined to have a nega on it, it's going to be burnt, it's as if it doesn't exist, it's as if it's chopped up and pulverized. The owner becomes tamei, you have to enter into the house. Veleka, and there's no house here anymore. Because you're going to pull out the nega, you have to destroy the house or the area where the thing is going to collapse the house. So how could it be that when you go into the house, you become tamei? You're not going into a house anymore. It's not going to be a house. Once they take care of it, it's not going to be a house. It says, Shani Otam Damakra, Venatats et Abayit. That he has to destroy the house. Afilu Shat Nititza. Even at the moment of destruction, Karui Bayit, it's still called a house. So the destruction that is being carried out has been carried out on a house. So the Torah still calls it a house, even though that it's set for demolition, it's set for destruction. So Tashma, Matlit Sheish Bo Shalosh Al Shalosh. A piece of cloth that has three etzbaot by three etzbaot, because it uses Shalosh Al Shalosh, it uses the Nekeva form here, so that's how you know that it's etzbaot. If it used the male form, it'd be Tfachim, that'd be Shlosha Al Shlosha. Since it's Shalosh Al Shalosh, that is etzbaot. So that is something that's mekabel tuma because it's ra'ui for an ani to use as a patch on his clothing. Afal pi she'imbo kzayit. Even though it doesn't add up to a kzayit, as Rashi says over here, it has very thin threads. Then, kevin she'nichnas uba lebayit ator tamatu. So it wants the cloth with a neg on it goes into a house, it's going to make the house tamay because it has like tumat oil like a mate. So here, once the majority of the cloth entered into the house, the house is now tamei, because we look at it as rubo kikulo, and it's as if the entire beged of 3x3 now went into the house, which is the minimum shiur of a beged. So my love, d'muchlat. Aren't we talking about a case here where it's muchletet? And therefore, you see from here that rubo kikulo, and it's not considered, deemed to be, michtat tute shiure. If you tell me that since it's subject to being burnt now, it's going to be thrown out, that it doesn't exist, then how can you say rubo kikulo? Ruba kakulo is only if the item exists. You could say that the robe is like the kol. But if you say the item doesn't exist at all, how could you claim that the ruba kakulo? So Mar says, lo, b'muzgeret. So now we're talking about not a muchletet cow. Here we're talking about here a case of a nega muzgeret. And since it's a nega muzgeret, it still has a shame beged on it because it's not yet been deemed to have to be burnt. It's not been declared as tamei in the muzgar, and therefore it has a shame beged. And then you can say ruba kakulo. Where it says, Yachayim Aseifa. If you're going to say we're talking about a nega on this cloth that has yet to be determined to be fully tamei, we're just waiting on it. Ayuba kama zeitim. If the cloth has many zeitim, meaning it's very thick threads, but it has, doesn't have the minimum shiur, kevin shenichnas mimena kezayit lebayit, tor, bayit tor, if a kezayit of it enters into the tor, tamatu. That's enough to be mitameit. So again, you have to have one of two things happen. Either a kezayit enters in the house, or a shalosh al shalosh, whichever is the lesser of the two shiurim. That is what determines when it becomes tamei. So in a case here, where you take it in, and shalosh by shalosh is the definition of the beged, then when rov goes in, it's considered a kekulo. Now then, if you have multiple kezayitim here, then if the kezayit enters the house, even though it's less than 3x3, that already is mitamei the whole house because of the nega that's there. So iamar bishlam ha-muchletet. Now, if you told me we're talking about a nega on this beggar that's already been determined to be tamei, I know to itkish the mate. Because that's where we have the hekesh between tumat ol and a mate is by a nega that is muchlat, that's been determined to be tamei. By Moshe's sister, when she gets sarat, Aaron turns to his brother and says, al nahi teik a mate. Don't make Miriam like a mate. If you're going to close her out and make her tamei now, she's going to be just like a mate. That's where the Gemara gets, mitzorah chashuv kamate. And mitzorah is just like a mate. So over here you see that, where is the mitzorah compared to being a mate? That's when they are muchlat, when they've been determined for sure to be tamei. So over here, how can you talk about tumat ol if you're talking about something that is musgar and not muchlat? So elayim art musgaret amai itkesh tamei. Where do we see every hekesh like this? Where it says, shani otam, over there again it's different, amakrav sarafata beged. It says that you have to burn the beged that has the nega in it. So again, we'll go back to saying you're right. It's muchlat. It's a case where we have determined already it's tamei. Yes, it's slated to be burnt here. But when the Torah comes to tell you to be burned, it says sarafet abeged. Again, it gives the definition of the item that you're burning to be a beged. If you do that, that even though now it's slated to be burnt, it still has a status of beged. It has a status of beged. I can explain to you why it says rubo kikulo over here, and it's not ketute mechtat shure. I agree. The pashtut of pasuk is that sarafet abeged is the item that needs to be burnt. You could have argued that it could have said the sarafoto. You could have used a pronoun instead of the word beged. So since it didn't say seraf oto, it says seraf beged, it seems like the Torah is defining the item as still being a beged, and that's what the Gemara is playing on. So Gemara says, afilu b'shat serifa kori beged, v'ligmor minei. So why don't we extrapolate from there, anything that is considered or slated for burning or for destruction still has a status of the item that it was before. We just had two of these by tumat ha-negayim, by bayit and by beged. So why don't we say the same thing by chalitza? Let's say the same thing here, where the shoe is mukhlat, it's still classified as a shoe. Since it's still classified as a shoe, you can do chalitza with it. It says, Isur mituma lo gamrinan. You can't extrapolate from tuma to isur. Tuma, as Rashi says, is shuchot tuma chidushu. It's a world unto its own. Tuma is its own world, and it has its own rules, and they're not subject to the rules that would apply to isur veheter. So you can't extrapolate a rule that is true by tuma to rule of isur, which would be chalitza. Your question's a fair question, because the Gemara in Shabbat brings up the Mishnayot and Kelim all the time to prove whether something's a Kli or not a Kli. So over there, we're extrapolating from Tuma into Shabbat. The answer to that is that over there, they're not extrapolating a din, they're extrapolating a definition. The din by Tuma is that in order to be Mekabel Tuma, you need to be a Kli. On Shabbat, for you not to be Muksa, you need to be a Kli. So we're searching for the same definition. And we're not looking for the halacha by Tuma. We're saying, well, if Tuma is there, that's a mare makom, it's a gili milto, this is a kli. Once it's a kli, now I can apply that by Shabbat to determine what the status of this item is in Shabbat. So I'm not trying to take the din over, I'm trying to take it the definition there. You could argue that's the same thing here, because over here it's defining the item as a beged, or as a bayit, so that should be true as well for a chalitza. Here the Gemara says that has implications that are not just about the definition of the item, but again, that has halachic ramifications, and we're not going to allow you to extrapolate that over here. So Amar Rava. Rava now says, Hilchata, what's the halacha? Echad sandal muzgar, ve'echad sandal shel muchlat, ve'echad sandal shel avodat kochavim. Whether it's a shoe that has a tzarat in it that's been waiting to be determined, or even a sandal has a tzarat in it that has already been determined to be problematic, tumah, or a shoe that they put on the Avodah Zarah. When they move the Avodah Zarah on, they put on these shoes for, you know, decorative purposes when they're moving it around. Lo tachlot. You shouldn't use them for chalitza. Vim chalitza. But if you do use them, chalitza ta, ksheira. In all these instances, bidiavad, it works. So that's similar to Rav Papa's quote of Rava, that both musgar and mukhlat are fine in terms of chalitza bidiavad. And here we added in addition to that, the sandal of odat kochavim, which Rashi asks over here, what do you mean? How could it be that by a shoe of Avodah Zarah, that you could use that for a chalitza, it's subject to the rules of Avodah Zarah, which means it has to be destroyed or burnt. It's ktutei michta tzurei. So Rashi says two reasons. He says, it's not true, because number one, misham shei avodat kochavim lav l'sreifa kaimot. So number one is that those that things that service Avodah Zarah, not Avodah Zarah itself, is not subject to sreifa. In addition to itlahu takanta bebitul, because all you need is the goy to mevatel the item. A goy who has a Avodah Zarah can mevatel the Avodah Zarah, and being mevatel the Avodah Zarah, then it allows it now to be used, it's not subject to destruction. So there's a way out of this without having to destroy the item. V'im ishum isra hana, but in the interim there's still an isra hana with the item. Chalitza lav la'anoi, it's mitzvah lav la'anot nitnu. And so therefore if you're doing the mitzvah, you're not trying to get hana from it, and that's why it's allowed to be used. That's the way Rashi explains it over here. It's a very, very large Tosafot that discusses the issue over here. The Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, says that the case here is a case after Bittul. It's post-Bittul. They already were mevatel the Avodah Zarah. So why can't you use it? He said, still ma'us. It's not, to do a mitzvah was something that was once a mishamish to Avodah Zarah. That's not a nice thing to do. It's not a proper thing to do. But if you do it, b'diavad, it's okay. So that's why Rabbeinu Tam explains it. Rashi says even before Bittul, it's still okay because the possibility of Bittul means that it's not for sure going to Sreifa, and therefore it's not Ketutei Michtat Shurei. Shel Takrovet Avodat Kochavim, if it's something that is being Mukrav to Avodah Zarah, Vishel Ir Anidachat, or a city that's been condemned to be destroyed because they all went off the path and worshipped Avodah Zarah, Vishel Zakein, Shel Suili Kavodol, for an elder person that's done for Kavod, I would have said that that means like a king. When he's sitting on his throne, he has these shoes that are decorative in nature, not for walking in very long distances. The way Rashi suggests over here, it's tachrichin. These are the shoes that you put on the maids. So they're not going to be walked in. Lo tachlots, you may not do chalitza with them. Chalitza, chalitza psula. If you do chalitza with these, they are pasul, because by irani dachat and by takrovet avodah zarah, they're subject to sreifa. They're ktutei michta tzurei, they don't exist. And that by zakein asui lechvodo, they're not made to walk in. They're not shoes for walking. They're shoes to be put on his feet because he's going into the grave. They're not shoes that are for walking purposes. Amalei Ravina the Ravashi, maishna zakein asui lechvodo de lavli ilucha avit. He says, why is it by the shoes of the zakein? Again, either these are tachrichim, I said, or decorative types of shoes that you wouldn't really wear to walk around in. You just put them on your feet because they look good. So in that case, how come you can't use it for chalitza? They're not made for walking in. The Beit Din Anami, they're a shoe that they keep in baked in to do chalitza with. It's not made to walk in because they're keeping it for chalitza. Its only purpose is for chalitza. It's not made to be walked in. If the Shliach Beit Din, the sheriff that the Beit Din sends out to bring the Balei Din in, if he needed a shoe and he borrowed this shoe and went out with it, you think the Dayanim would mind? The answer is no. So since it could be used for walking in, even though it's not used generally, but if someone used it, they wouldn't be so upset that he used that item for walking in. On the other hand, by tachrichin, it would be unacceptable to take the tachrichin and walk in them. Somebody would be makbid about that. Same thing, it was a shoe just for kavod. You don't just go away and borrow that and willy-nilly walk around in it. So because of that, that shoe is not a shoe that is made to walk in. The other shoe, by the shoe of Beit Din, it's part of, I told you, the toolkit of Beit Din, is that they have a special shoe for chalitza, especially today, they have one that has multiple straps and all sorts of things on it. To be yotzei all the dayot of the rishonim as to how or what type of shoe you need in order to do chalitza. So that type of special sandal that they have, that is considered to be lalochbo, that is considered to be used to walk in, because if someone borrowed or used it, they wouldn't be so makpid about the fact that he utilized it, because it's not made just for honor, it's not just made for a singular purpose of chalitza, even though that is what it's made for, but it could be used for the other item, and we wouldn't stop you from using it if you had to in a pinch, and therefore it has a classification of a shoe and is kosher for chalitza. Okay, we'll stop you on the top of Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah.